Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Motormouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Sylvie. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between. This week we are joined by fellow podcaster and founder and host of the globally successful The Parc Fermé podcast, Todd McCandless. He joins us from across the pond to discuss all the current goings on in motorsport, particularly Formula One, in the first of a little spin-off series from our regular episodes. Thank you so much to you guys who continue to download and listen. If you like it, please do leave us a review. It really helps us to get bigger and enjoy.
So a warm welcome to something a little bit different. This week is a bonus edition of the Motormouth podcast. This is the first of a series where we meet unsung heroes or interesting people from the industry who we feel you should be familiar with and who should get your attention. However, before we introduce today's guest, I need to dial in Essex and introduce the man who I've run out of superlatives to describe over the course of the last 30 episodes or so. So I'm reverting back to the status quo and commenting on the size of his ridiculous feet. Size 16 feet. Yes, ladies and gents, it's the man who simply cannot fit into a modern day supercar, but strangely does fit into Nigel Mansell's 1990 Formula One car. And believe me, we have the evidence. It's Mr. Harry Benjamin. How are you doing?
I'm very well. And I do fit very snugly into Nigel Mansell's car.
Yeah.
And I can't believe we managed to talk our way into that at Goodwood last year. I really don't know how they let us.
Can you remember
basically get into a Ferrari F1 car?
Can you remember the car and the year?
Didn't you just say it? 1990.
Well, it wasn't
his race car. It was
no.
The test car.
Yeah, and I'm not sure it was 1990. It was in the 90s, but I'm not sure it was a 1990 car. It was a Ferrari, so whatever date that was, I'll guess
it
probably
wasn't actually the race car. It was a test car, but it's cooler to say it's the race car.
Yeah,
I am all well here. It's pouring with rain in Essex at the moment. Typical, but actually it's quite nice because it's been so hot and I don't do well in the heat. I'm excited as well. Like, there's motorsport is sort of coming back now that it's there. See, I watched the IndyCar race, the first IndyCar race I've seen in a very, very, very long time. I've decided I'm going to force myself to watch whatever is left of the season.
You should.
And get into it. And maybe even NASCAR if I can bring myself to watch that as well. Just excited about motorsport coming back.
Yeah, no, same. It's all good. I feel like we're starting to come out of this whole lockdown thing, and we know we've just had a chat with Steve Ryder on the British Touring Car side, and obviously that's starting in the first weekend of August. We've got British Touring Cars back in action, so slowly things are creeping back in. Anyway, shall I introduce today's guest?
I think so.
So for this first foray into a bonus show, we've turned to someone who probably has until today very little idea that he was a major part of the inspiration for this podcast. Todd is a businessman by day and motorsport aficionado by night. He's the founder of theparcfermé.com, which is home to an abundance of motorsport and Formula One related news, views, opinion, and he's also host of the Parc Fermé podcast, which as of recording today has almost 700 episodes, which makes our paltry 30 odd look quite frankly ridiculous, and enjoys over 65,000 downloads a month. He joins us all the way from his home in St. Louis, Missouri, in the US state that not many people know, borders no less than 8 different other states, and is also known as the Cave State, with more than 6,000 known caves in existence. And I wonder if Todd's man cave counts in that number. Anyway, enough of my ramblings. Todd, otherwise known as Negative Camber, welcome to the Motormouth podcast.
Guys, it's an absolute honor to be here. Thank you so much for having me on.
No, it's our pleasure. And you probably had no idea that while you were chucking out all these episodes over the last however many years you've been running the podcast, that there was a couple of guys over in the UK who were listening. And certainly your podcasts inspired us to take the plunge and have a go at it ourselves. And here we are 30-odd episodes later and several tens of thousands of downloads. And we credit a lot of it to you. So thank you for giving us the inspiration to do this.
Well, good heavens. No, I had no idea. Anyone that listens to our podcast knows I'm a huge Anglophile and love all things British. And but I always consider looking at our listener numbers and viewer numbers, I always consider, you know, that the British, you know, they're a little lukewarm about me, right? Here's a Yankee talking about our sport. And I don't know how well that goes. I'm a kind of a regular on TalkSport radio, and I always wonder, you know, how do the British feel about a Yankee come on and talking about their sport, you know, to all those people in London? But the idea that we would, you know, inspire a couple of British guys to do a podcast, no, it's beyond me. But I'm very humbled by that, and that's terrific that you guys are doing it, and you have a great podcast and a great series. So, congrats.
Well, thank you, and enough mutual back patting. It's
great. Your dream at last.
Yeah, I have. It's pathetic. I'm like a fanboy here. It's ridiculous.
He is your number one fan. let's talk about you know what's going on before we dive into the world of motorsport. And you know, we're living in this crazy new world at the moment, which I seem to say at the beginning of every single podcast. But we are. What's it like over where you are? Lockdown, semi-lockdown, coronavirus, all this stuff. How have you been getting on with it all?
Yeah, all great questions. You know, America, it's a big place. There's a lot of territory. Where I'm specifically located in the middle of America, we don't have the population centers like you would see in East Coast, West Coast. So probably not feeling quite the number of COVID cases or the impact as the right and left coast. But certainly the lockdown was a huge impact, just like it was in the UK. Economically, and all the events, my day job certainly impacted by that as well, with no live events, period. So that's always an impact. And then, you know, to Tim's point, a little bit about, you know, there's a sense of coming out of that lockdown right now. I think the point, it's kind of funny. We had an event in the city and local community was like, you know, we all need to get out and march en masse to support this cause. And then, you know, everybody does that and is like, okay, now everybody get their butts back inside. There's a pandemic, you know. We're like, well, wait a minute, you know, we all just, you know. So, yeah, I think it's just a lot of confusion. I think at this point, people are pretty much the frustration, confusion. Mm. Everybody's ready to get this behind us and get back to racing, to be honest with you.
Exactly. I think we're all so excited and you know, we've been filled with sort of virtual racing galore the last couple of months, but it never comes quite close to the real thing, which we're now, you know, getting a taste of. First of all, have you been watching any of the virtual racing? How have you found that?
Yeah, no, guys, I've taken a lot of incoming on this on our podcast. I'm not a fan of that. I feel like I'm sitting watching my daughters play a racing game. you know, it's just not, you know,
not the same,
they
hit is the, it?
No, it's not. I appreciate it for what it is, but and what they tried to do to create some content and entertainment, all of that's really good. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that at all. It's not my thing. If I'm playing the game, then I'm all in. But you know, sitting around watching a picture of George Russell hustle a car around a virtual track just doesn't do me, because I know what George Russell's really capable of, and that's what I want to see, you know.
Fingers crossed he has a car that can actually do it when we get the season going again. And but obviously we've had some IndyCar racing recently as well, back on Texas Motor Speedway. That was actually the first IndyCar race I've seen in a while, and actually, you know, even though they do go around in circles, I was pleasantly surprised and quite enjoyed it. It wasn't the most entertaining race of all, but it was just actually just more than just nice to see actual cars on a track. What was your take on it?
Yeah, no, you're exactly, you're spot on, Harry. It wasn't probably the most exciting IndyCar race in the world, but look at, beggars can't be choosers at this point. Racing's right. I watched two NASCAR races already, and, you know, that's
desperation
a rarity.
Time.
Yeah. It's like, I just don't normally do that. So, yeah, the IndyCar race was good. I think, you know, we got to see a little bit about how they're approaching the sort of COVID issues and the paddock and how they're trying to protect the paddock. We've seen that with NASCAR, too. So I think that there's it's been interesting to juxtapose kind of how those two series have approached that and then try to extrapolate kind of what we think F1 will do in the paddock and how they'll control that. So I think that that's been interesting. IndyCar. Bit of a love-hate relationship with IndyCar. Huge Champ Car fan, or from the kart days. But now that Penske's bought IndyCar, I've met Roger 3 times, and you know, just could not meet a more delightful guy. And he's committed to that, and I'm actually really excited about the trajectory of IndyCar. Harry, I'm like, I'm not a big fan of ovals. I'm just not. That doesn't excite me, but where he's heading with the series, I think, is kind of exciting. So we'll see what happens. But yeah, if we could get some of the series back to like the kart days, so that would be good.
It is interesting the oval racing. I mean, it's hard for us to comprehend, I guess, on this side of the pond, especially because we're just not used to it. I mean, I've watched a fair amount of IndyCar, and while it might not be always that interesting, it is. You've got to respect what they're doing and the bravery. And Harry and I were watching the documentary with Willie T. Ribbs, because we've got him coming on the show in the next few days. And some of the crashes that are in that documentary of people, you know, a tiny little error on an oval and you're in the wall and you're in trouble. So the bravery around it is astonishing. But I agree, it's not the most interesting thing in the world outside of perhaps the Indy 500, which is something I can certainly watch from start to finish and enjoy every second of.
Yeah, the 500 is a different deal. You know, that's just a different element. And that's why when Formula One raced at Indy, wasn't a big fan of that. Formula One cars weren't meant to go 200 plus miles an hour next to a wall like that. And you saw Ralf Schumacher, you know, had that crash back then and was knocked unconscious. So very dangerous. But the Indy car, the bravery, there's nothing. There's nothing just, I guess, lack of a better word is really, there's nothing easy about what they do and certainly a bravery, but when you're going 225 miles an hour around those ovals, I mean, the slightest error and it could be all over. And we've seen this time and time with Dan Weldon and different people in our IndyCar. And so, yeah, the respect of the bravery has got to be there. And that's an excitement, you know, that element of danger. But I really like the IndyCars when they do the road courses in Sonoma and Elkhart's one of my favorites. So.
Yeah, I love them. And actually, it was really interesting to see for the first time the aero screens that are going on these IndyCars. And I completely forgot that they were even become a thing because actually, you know, we had the whole Halo thing, of course, the last couple of years with Formula One. Now I don't bat an eyelid about them. No. I don't see them. I don't, you know, I couldn't care less. And, you know, I think they've been proved to have saved lives. The aero screen, however, that
you can
is
see those.
A lot more visible, perhaps. Yeah. But you know, I can get on board with it. I don't know about you.
Ooh. Yeah, you know, it's a Red Bull design, right? And it was, it seemed a little, just the shape of it was a little odd as compared to the overall flow of the IndyCar. It almost looked like it was sort of a bucket, you know, instead of tapering in, it was like this, like almost like a bucket, you know?
Doesn't it like it would be very helpful to the aerodynamics?
No, it doesn't. You know, whether it's Halo or the aero screen, my thinking about it is certainly, I don't downplay the need for safety and all those issues, but the reality of it is I just feel like there's got to be a more elegant solution. to this, you know? Mm. And I don't feel like we've got there yet. Don't ask me what it is. I'm not an engineer, but, but you know, the aero screen looks a little bulky, a little clunky. I never thought I'd hear myself say this, Harry, but it looks a lot more bulky or clunky than the Halo.
Yeah.
I thought the Halo was a nightmare. So, yeah, I was hoping they could come up with something a little more elegant. I also wonder, IndyCar doesn't really apply because they're not racing in the rain quite like Formula One does and those kind of things. But when you have that glass, if you have oil or spray or you know, how the driver manages that.
They need a little wiper, don't they? Just
But I suppose they can reach over and pull.
I guess in Formula One, at least they've, you know, when the Halo first came out, everyone was like, oh my God, this is the worst thing to happen to motorsport ever. You know, what a disaster. And then people quickly get used to it. But I suppose the engineers in Formula One are amazing and intelligent people. And they've made it look pretty much as good as it can look. And it blends into the car quite nicely. And like you say, Harry, you barely notice it now. And it's sort of, when you see a car now from a few years ago without one, it's kind of sort of shocking to see. Let's talk Formula One. So obviously F1 is historically in the States not always been received that well. What got you interested in Formula One? Have you always been a fan? Is it a recent thing? Have you loved it since you were young? Where did this all come about?
Yeah, great question. I'm aging myself here. I hate to do that. I'm not young and full of energy like you two. this goes back to like the early 70s when I was real little though.
Not as little as us. We weren't even there.
Yeah, right. You weren't there. Yeah. It was my dad. Loved cars. He just loved cars. It's not necessarily like working on them and he wasn't a shade tree mechanic or anything, but he just liked cars. And so he used to watch racing, and I remember watching Indy back then when I was really, really little and barely knew what was going on, let alone knew what my name was. And I remember sitting on the couch the first time, and I was very, very small, but I just remember the imagery of this black and gold like wedge car that was driving around. It was a Lotus 72. With Emerson Fittipaldi and Mario Andretti. And I remember seeing it like at Monaco, I think the streets of Monaco. And said, if memory serves correctly, it was raining. And I was just mesmerized by that. Now, my love of all things UK goes all the way back then, because I remember seeing those cars. Now, we used to watch Indy 2, but there was something about Formula One that just seemed to be above everything else at the time, and growing up, it always seems to be the racing series by which everything is measured. And I remember vividly, I was in with my parents on a trip, and we were in Minneapolis, and we went to this store, and it was like a toy store in this walk around area in Minneapolis. And I walked in, and there was this case, and it said Corgi on it, and it happens to be a British toy company, right? And inside that case, they had the Lotus 72, and I still have it. It's on my bookshelf. And so I remember getting that as a little boy. I got the Lotus 72 and a Surtees, I think. And so I had these little Corgi cars. Every once in a while, somebody will say, oh, you know, that's cool. I got an old Corgi, and they'll send it to me. But that was really the start. And then when I heard of V12, in particular, the Ferrari V12 and the Matra V12, that seemed to be otherworldly to me as a small boy. And from that time, I was hooked on Formula One. So, yeah, it's a bit of a circuitous route to Formula One fandom, but because it's not as popular here. But that's kind of where I got my start.
And Ferrari's your team, right?
Yeah, I've just always liked Ferrari. I like a lot of the time. I like McLaren and Williams, obviously, and Mercedes, and Red Bull, what they've done is amazing. Yeah, there's always had that soft spot in my heart for Scuderia Ferrari because of the V12, and that's the first thing I remember seeing is those Lotus cars, and then those red cars looked awesome, and they sounded awesome, and so I've always been a bit of a Ferrari fan.
Is that your favorite era then, sort of the V12 era?
My favorite era, I'm a bit of a romantic in that sense, would be the 60s, late 60s. That would be my favorite. 68 in particular, favorite Formula One car is probably the Lotus 49 is my favorite. Just it's just an epic car. Now there's a lot you could go through. The 7-Up car was an awesome car. That's probably my favorite era in that time, late 60s, early 70s.
So when did that crossover come to setting up, you know, putting out Formula One content with, you know, the Parc Fermé? I know it wasn't originally called that. So talk us through, you know, how that sort of came about.
Yeah. So this was back in 2005, because back then everybody was either had one or starting to have a blog, right? And so I thought, well, I don't know, everybody else is doing it, you know, maybe I should. The impetus behind that here is really this. It's self-serving and shameful to say, but there weren't a lot of sites to go talk about Formula One. And certainly as an American, and what sites there were, I won't mention names, but there's still a popular F1 publication now. They had forums. And so you would go into these forums and you get excited because you want to talk about Formula One. So you create an account and you would go in, and then you would just get absolutely hammered and flamed by people in there because your post count was low. So you didn't know anything about Formula One. It was like, I've been watching it since the early 70s. No, you only got 20 posts. What do you know about it? And I thought, wow, that's rude, you know? And I got disheartened by trying to have conversations in these forums. And then when they found out I was an American, it was like, well, you don't know crap about Formula One.
The perfect storm.
I get it. I'm a Yankee, but I have been watching, you know, and I do take notes and pay attention. And so then I thought, you know, this is silly, because there's these people in these forums that come across as being Delphic oracles of Formula One. And there needs to be a safe harbor for veterans and new fans alike. The idea is to bring new fans into the sport and get them attached to the sport for the reasons that we as veterans got attached to the sport. It wasn't just a race. It was the personalities. It was who these characters in the Formula One paddock were, the politics, the money, the technology. You know, once you get, and you know, you guys are British, you're around this every day. You know, your daily publications carry Formula One news. They don't do that in the States. And so you have to really hunt it down in the States. Now, today it's much better, but back then it wasn't. So I decided to create a blog that was going to be a safe harbor for new fans and veterans alike, where we weren't going to flame anyone. And we have one rule, which is decorum and civility. Disagree all you want, just no personal attacks. And thankfully, that's been resonant so long that I don't really have to police my own website, because our community does that for us. And if someone comes in and flames or does a drive-by shooting, they'll say, hey, that's not how we roll here. Go somewhere else. And so that's why I created the blog to begin with, is to really create a community that was a place where a new fan to Formula One could go and ask what they felt maybe a stupid question and not get flamed for it from a veteran who said, you're an idiot, you know. You would ask a question and a veteran would say, you know, that's a great question, and here's why they do that, you know. It's a teaching and a learning moment. And our guys all along since 2005 has always been, and certainly since the podcast in 07, has always been, we wanted to just be like two friends at a pub having a beer, talking about the sport they love. And we've said that back in 2005. And I know everyone says that now, and fair enough. But that is still kind of the vibe that we have all these years later.
So is that with Paul Charsley back in those days still? Or did you have a different setup, different people involved at the beginning?
Yeah, great question. So initially, when I started the blog, it was wonderful because I was just posting stuff to myself. And there was nobody reading it or, you know, looking at it. And back, man, I mean, prose swam from my fingertips like polywogs. I mean, it was amazing. The stuff I was writing back then was epic, yeah. Tim. I mean, it could have been Pulitzer stuff.
Well, I mean, for an audience of one, that audience loved it.
Audience of one, I loved it. It was awesome. I remember I got my first comment. And it said, they had a comment on a story, and it said, by Grace, someone named Grace. And I thought, okay, this is like some 50-year-old dude in Nebraska acting like he's a woman. Yeah. And so come to find out it wasn't. It was really Grace.
Yeah.
And she, you know, this goes way back, but she wasn't married at the time. And she, I just found it amazing that she was into Formula One too. And so she started commenting and we'd have these conversations. And I said, hey, do you want to help me author stuff at the website, you know? And she said, sure. So we started doing that. And then in 07, said, everybody's doing a podcast. Why don't we do a podcast for the website at the time, which was formulaoneblog.com. And she said, okay, great. And so it really, Tim, started with Grace. And then Paul, I met Paul when his wife is from St. Louis. He lived in St. Louis for a time. And I met Paul. I was the president of the St. Louis European Auto Show. I was the board president for that organization. It was a charity, and we have every year a European auto show. And so met Paul kind of through connections there, and then he came on board, and the rest is history.
Yeah, it's funny because so 2007 you started the podcast. That is from our side of the world, that is early, because
I wanted to say I've just written a dissertation for my graduating university, a dissertation on radio drama and podcasts, and 2007, that must have been one of the first sort of particularly motorsport podcasts, especially independent podcasts as well, ever.
Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah.
But in the States, they're much, much bigger than here. Like we're only just getting on board with podcasts here, and there's loads popping up, even in motorsport now. There's new motorsport podcasts coming out, it seems like every week at the moment, and some really big names doing them. But we're just catching up. We're scratching the surface over here compared to the States, where it's already such a big thing. But in 07, we were nowhere near where the States is.
Yeah, that's interesting. The content, podcast content here, it's a big deal in the States, and a lot of people digest it. There's podcasts on everything. And in 07, yeah, there are very, very few F1 podcasts out there. And, you know, it was sort of a why not? Let's give it a shot. Everything we've done on the website, and I don't mean this as arrogance at all, so please don't take it this way, but everything we've done on the website has just been white hat strategy. I've never bought a link. I've never paid for content. I've never gamed the system. Our podcast has, over 400 reviews, and they're all, you know, 4 or 5 star reviews. That's all organic. I've never, you know, paid for reviews. I've never done any of that because it's not my day job, guys. Mm. And so I don't have time to sit around and strategize on how to artificially prop up my website or podcast. I just don't have time to do it.
Yeah.
So it's all been blood, sweat, and tears, and a very forgiving wife at the amount of time that I spend doing this night job, if you will, on top of my day job. So, yeah, it's grown. Depending on what's happening, we can run between 65 and 80,000 downloads a month. I think we're over 6 million total downloads.
That's amazing.
And, we're well over 700 podcasts if you consider our F1 downshift, our downshift episodes, which are our interview episodes that we do as well. So, yeah, and I just started a new one called TPF Stories. And so, yeah, there's podcasts are pretty big now. You know, there's much bigger F1 podcasts than us. You know, I didn't, like I said, it's not my day job. Had I focused and really done that exclusively, then maybe we'd be bigger, but, it is what it is.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Well, let's look at some recent F1 news then. So, I'm interested to get your thoughts on what's going on at Williams. So, you know, Claire is getting a lot of heat from every angle, some fair, some not so fair. What do you put it down to, and how do you see this ending up?
Oh, that's a really big question, Tim.
And you should definitely have the answer to it, right?
Yeah. No, I wish I did. I'd send Claire an email and tell her. But yes, so she has taken a lot of incoming, and I've been critical. Not of Claire personally, because I like Claire. I think, you know, she's done as good a job as she can with the resources she has. The thing that's hurting Claire is the business model of Formula One. That's what's hurting Claire. It's if you go back and look at Williams a long time ago, many, many years ago, most of the teams started relying on the prize money of Formula One as their main revenue stream instead of big title sponsors. So when the marketing really kind of evaporated and the tobacco money left, Williams always found a way to try to keep the balance sheet black, keep everybody's paycheck coming, and make it a tidy business that they could all work in, irrespective of if they were winning and charging for championships or not. And even when they were, you know, with BMW or whatever it might be. The challenge is really when they redid the Concorde Agreement to get the top teams to sign in and the business model changed that. They were reliant on the prize money. And as you get into that death spiral of points and finishing 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th in the championship, and then the delay on that payout over 2 and 3 years, it becomes untenable. So they have to start trying to find other ways to make money. I think she's navigated that as best she could, finding investors. Toto Wolff was one of them. Now Latifi's one of them. They're trying to find ways to keep things solvent and keep that team going forward. But that's really her biggest enemy. Now, on the flip side of that is you've got to try a lot of things. And when your team's doing really poorly, you don't fire the whole team. You fire the coach. And I think in Claire's case, I was advocating, look, move her up. Don't kick her out. Don't move her down. Move her up to take her dad's place as sort of the executive over that team. But go find an Andreas Seidel. You know, go find a person that can come in and just change the energy of the team. You know, if what you're trying isn't working and the business model is killing you, go find someone else. And maybe they were thinking they were going to get that with Patty Lowe, and that didn't pan out clearly.
The thing might be with that, or what I've sort of gathered anyway, and, you know, what do I know? But Claire Williams very much seems to be, as, you know, it's inherent clearly in the Williams family. They are a racing family. She wants to be on the ground, on hands on, you know, doing everything.
Front being and center.
Still and moving that position up. Yes, it's probably, you know, it looks nicer on paper and should probably, you know, actually probably have a bit of an easier time of it. It's probably her own sense of racing blood that, you know, makes her a bit absolvent of wanting to move on.
Yeah, and I'm sure that plays a large part of it. There's such a rich, rich history in that. I've asked a question before of our community. Do you feel there's a difference between Frank Williams, who is a pure racer at heart? Is there a difference between being a pure racer like Frank and the daughter of a pure racer? Right? Is she as motivated and as steeped in the racing that he is? Does it drive her heart the way it did his?
You know? Yeah, I mean,
unrelenting from Frank's point.
It's probably not quite the same. And I mean, she would have been around motorsport since day dot.
All her life.
You know, yeah. So she obviously knows the paddock inside out. She knows the business inside out. But she's, I don't know, has she got that steely determination, business acumen, and drive to be able to steer a ship like Williams is open for debate. And a lot of people don't think she does. Her brother, some people thought he did. And, you know, should it have been the other way around? It's a difficult one because I feel, on one hand, I feel really, really sorry for her. Like, she really, you probably see the press, you know, you follow the UK press and social media, Twitter in particular, you know, as soon as someone says, "What's up with Williams?" it just goes Claire bashing nonstop.
Yeah.
So I do feel sorry for her. But my gut feeling is that, a bit like you, I feel like she needs to step aside, move up, take some other position, and someone hardcore, you know, whether it's a Gunter Steiner type character who's just going to break some balls and, you know, grab it by the horns and turn the whole thing around. I don't know, but it feels like it needs fresh impetus to change the atmosphere at that team. But it's just such a shame. You know, the biggest thing is it's just such a pity to see a team like Williams like this, and hopefully they get the investment that lets them keep going as Williams.
I'm interested. I don't know. I might have missed this. I haven't seen a reason as to why Rocket are no longer their title sponsor.
Didn't pay?
Because it sounds like Williams is very much terminated that, not the other way around.
It stopped very quickly.
Yeah, I haven't seen an explanation of that. My guess is that the checks didn't show up.
Yeah, I think
why
so.
Why else would you terminate with immediate effect a sponsorship?
It's weird.
But my other thing, my other question was Rocket. I have never heard of them before. They've come out of nowhere, it seems, and they
like
sponsor
Rich Energy.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, I did see on Twitter, I don't know how real it is, but I did see a Rich Energy branded Williams 2020 car.
Yeah.
So wait and see on that one.
That's
so Rocket also sponsor a lot of junior Formula
W Series
in the UK. You know, W Series. They've been sponsoring virtual racing as well. They've gone mad.
And they came out.
Some cash.
They came out recently with a tweet, which Catherine Bond Muir, who we've had on the podcast, shared about them saying, we are dedicated to the W Series. You know, we're here for the long haul. You know, you sort of think, there's a bit of PR spin going on here after the Williams.
Some sort of fallout. Maybe, maybe they just feel like they want to go in a different direction and Williams isn't the direction they want to go in. It would be concerning to if it is a case of sponsors saying, we're going to go with the W Series, we're going to go with Formula E, we're going to go with junior categories, because Formula One isn't delivering the type of product that's really helping our brand. That's a concern.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, totally agree. Yeah. Okay, cost cap. Let's talk about that. So cost cap is being brought in. Great. $145 million, probably down to $135 million by the time they finish with it from 2023 onwards. How much of an impact do you think this will have on F1? And also give us your thoughts on the aerodynamic changes that are coming in and whether you think that's going to improve the show.
Yeah, so cost caps, I think, I think it will be a big impact. I think it's going to be very difficult to manage, I think, and to monitor. It would not surprise me to see over the next few years someone caught sort of flouting the cost cap in some way, be it, just disingenuous or by accident. How the FIA on one side says we don't have enough resources to have a consistent stewarding crew that does every race, but then on the flip side says, but we do have enough resources to plow through the P&Ls of every single team and manufacturer and really pick the fly poop out of the pepper on this and really figure out who's spending where, right? And I think, okay, wait a minute, time out, folks. It's not making sense. I don't know how they're going to do that with efficacy, because this year was supposed to be the test year where they were going to test that. Maybe they still will, but it's not a full season, so it's hard to know. But here's the change that I think is interesting around the cost cap. So what my concern was is that they were going to usher in the cost cap, but with non-cost capped budgets to create the new car. And that was a concern for me, because already Mercedes has a baked in advantage from a power unit standpoint. And, you could argue chassis too. So if they were unfettered in the amount of money they could spend on the new regulation changes, and then they do the cost cap, well, then we've got a car that has had hundreds of millions spent in development that now will last the whole cost cap era. Mm. And, I had issues with that. The changes with all the pandemic is that they've pushed all that back, and now the new car is going to be designed, the bulk of it, with a cost cap in tow. And I think that'll be the biggest impact.
Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be interesting. And then on the aero front, we've got we've seen the renders of the new car. Got rid of all these silly little bits and pieces hanging off wings and whatever else. Cleaner cars, cleaner air, more ground effect, closer racing. Should be good.
I have your word on that. Right? So, we had been advocating for quite some time on the aero. This is like the elephant in the room for everyone, right? Not because there isn't good reasons, because if the three of us owned a team, the least expensive place for the three of us to make bigger gains in lap times is through aero development. So, of course, we want to keep that there and we want to continue with that aero development. It's a black art. Maybe the three of us would hire Adrian Newey, so we've got a leg up. And so that makes sense.
I'm just saying, if we've got this money that we will be working together, how about we just buy Williams and take them to the top?
Oh, there you go.
Let's do it. So I feel like the aero, what we've said all along is the aero is the dark art, but it also is a rabbit trail that we've gone so far down that it's impacting the racing. And everyone knows this. Ross Brawn, everyone knows this. So what we were saying is, look, no one wants a spec series, but pick the front wing or the back wing. We don't care. Make it a spec wing. You don't have to make it a spec car, just make it a spec wing. Reduce the downforce by 70%. You can't crank on a ton of downforce on a front wing if the rear wing isn't delivering. You've got to balance the car. So if you did that, it automatically neuters this aero. And it seems in some part that's what this new aero regulation is. It's reduced aero downforce on the wings, more fluid, trying to lock down a lot of the aero impact and development areas. So we'll see. If you consider that they're successful at this and that they reduce the aero, substantially, then it should produce better racing and more in particular, that dirty air, and should allow those cars to follow closer.
Yeah.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, touch wood. I mean, we've spoken to a lot of racing drivers about it that have come on the show, and the general feeling is that it's a positive move. So I think, touch wood, it will have some closer racing. I mean, I'm not that... Formula One gets such a bad rep, doesn't it? And we all look back at, we've talked about this with others, we've looked back at the 70s and the 80s and the 90s and rose-tinted glasses and look at the racing back then and think how wonderful it was and how terrible it is now. But we get some good battles now. When you look at when Rosberg was against Hamilton and some of the, the races they had in Bahrain and stuff, it's some incredible racing. So I think we're always a bit down on F1. But, if this makes it even more exciting, then great.
Mm. I agree. I don't know that that's I'm 100% behind you on that. I don't think that's necessarily fair. I'm not quite sure. I've been watching for a long time, and I'm not quite sure when the sentiment developed that any one of those cars should be able to win on Sunday. Mm. That's never been Formula One.
No.
And it's rarely ever been racing in total, I don't believe that any one of the cars has to be able to win and that there should be, some sort of parity of all of the cars, or at least all of the outcomes, the potential outcomes that a Williams should be able to win a race against a Mercedes. So I don't believe that. I think where we are right now and what we're seeing is a reaction because you have such clear domination by Mercedes. And you say, well, Ferrari had domination, Red Bull. Yeah, not like this. Mm. This is going on, 7 years? Mm. So the reason for that is really the hybrid. And the hybrid is the one that brought everyone to its knees. It bankrupted three teams. It's not affordable, and it really needs to be changed. Yeah. And that's what we're really pressing back against. Everyone has an asterisk next to Vettel's name over his championship because he had the best car. Everyone has an asterisk around Schumacher because he has the best car. What are we going to say about Lewis? Mm. That engine has had a baked-in advantage since 2014 and has dominated everything by a mile. So, that's what we're pushing back against.
Yeah, for sure.
There's got to be more than one team that can win.
Yeah. The thing I would like to see, and I always look back to, 2010, 11, when we had, Caterham at Lotus and HRT and Marussia Manor. It's such a, when you look at the cost cap now and bringing in the hybrid, it's such a shame to lose those three teams because, steeped in all of the people there had such big names working. We talked to Karun Chandhok about his Hispania Racing days, and he was saying, we had such great people as part of the team. We had the guys who are now working for Mercedes who are taking them to championship. You just think, God, what could have been, eh? But yeah. What I want to suggest is your point on, not having every team being up for a win on Sunday. There is the argument where, it'd be way more exciting. You know, oh my God, is it going to be a Mercedes? Is it going to be a Williams? Can Kevin Magnussen and the Haas put it, you know, on pole? God, I don't know. But then what arguably perhaps is more interesting is take Mercedes. Before 2014, they were very much a midfield team, you know, and they really hadn't, you know, they had, you know, I suppose Braun were the precursor to it, had that one-off championship with Jensen Button. And then really with Rosberg and Schumacher, just a bit, you know, they were there, you know, P7 was a pretty good, you know, it was pretty standard for them. They were just ahead of, you know, just ahead of the main midfield. What they've done in that team, having developed that car and taken it to world championship heights, surely that is what we want to see more of. We want to see a team like, you know, Racing Point, Aston Martin develop and become a top tier team and see that development. Is that more interesting, or do we just want to see point blank 20 cars, 24 cars, I would like to see, racing for the win on Sundays? What's better?
Yeah, it's a great question. If you consider the time it took Mercedes to go from being bought out from Honda to Braun to Mercedes, and then the trajectory to the success that they made, what was that, 6-7 years, right? Very parallel to what it took Red Bull when they bought their team, and it took them about 6 or 7 years to get to that point of winning 4 titles in a row. So you can see this sort of trajectory. And the question that we have then is two different concepts, in the sense that Mercedes did it with the full might and resources of a manufacturer. Red Bull did not. So Red Bull did it with the genius of their all the people that work for that team, including Adrian Newey. And then we get to the hybrid, and it instantly neuters them. Gone. Couldn't recover. You could have a phalanx of Adrian Newey's at that team. Wasn't ever going to get them back up in beating Mercedes. That's the problem. So could we see, and the big question was, Haas do something similar as a privateer, right? To your point, Harry, what I would like to see, because it's not that every car has a chance to win, it's the dynamic between toppling the giant, right? It was when Renault beat Ferrari, you know, when Alonso beat Schumacher at Ferrari and took those two titles. It's when McLaren was dominant and Ferrari finally beat them in 2000. It was when Red Bull came in and won, and then Mercedes. So it's who can bring Mercedes down or who can, you know, fight against them. And right now it looks like it's got to be a manufacturer. And I would hope that it wouldn't have to be a manufacturer, you know, that it could be a Red Bull, a Racing Point, a privateer that could do that. And maybe the cost cap will get us there.
Yeah. Now, listen, we're going to move on to the lighter part, but the most important part of today's show, Todd. This is where we test your knowledge against the great and good of motorsport that we've interviewed over the last year or so. So I shall pass over to my illustrious colleague to introduce you to the Motormouth quiz.
Yes, Todd, cue sound track. Welcome to Motormouth, the hardest quiz in motorsport. We've had over, I think, nearing on 30 people take part in this now. There are 13 points up for grabs, and basically it's all to do with the quiz changes each week, so there's no consistency whatsoever. So it's either based around people and their careers, or the racing driver and team radio, and that is what I've chosen for you. I've got various clips from Formula One over the years, different incidents, different moments, and I want you to tell me what's going on about them, and then there's a bonus question at the end. So we're going to play you a clip, and then I'm just going to ask you a couple of questions about it, and it's 3 points up for grabs for each clip. Is that understood?
I think so.
And I'm expecting
going for a goose egg.
I'm expecting full marks.
I'm a Yankee.
No,
so, you know.
Listen,
I've got some excuse.
I've listened to hundreds of your podcasts, so I'm expecting seriously impressive F1 knowledge here, and you'll shatter my dreams and fanboy status if you come last.
Oh man, Paul is much better at this.
Come on, let's test your knowledge. Let's play clip number one, please.
Here we go.
I am stupid. I switch off everything.
That's all you get.
So who is that?
Oh, hold on. I remember that.
That sigh is never a good sign on a question.
It's not a good sign.
It's not
again.
Good sign.
We'll play it to you again if you want.
Is that Charles Leclerc?
Yes.
Boom. 1 point in the bag. Well done. That is Charles Leclerc. What's he talking about? What's he upset over?
Tough bit.
he spun it off the island, didn't he? And he was mad about that.
There was a crash. Yes.
Yeah.
Where? Think about this.
you want it one more time?
Yeah.
Here it comes.
Hi, I'm stupid. Hi, I'm stupid. I switch off everything.
And it doesn't really help, does it?
No. It was earlier in the season, I think.
What year do you think we're talking here?
Was it Germany?
I'm afraid not. Can you give me a year? Last track to get a year.
Oh, let's see. That was, I think it was it last year?
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. Okay, you've recovered there with a point. Yeah. And it was Leclerc crashing in the castle complex in Baku.
Yes. Okay.
But you know what? Could have been awful. Solid start. Solid 3 points on that one. Yeah. Let's get clip number two.
Here we go. That's a horrible noise.
Oh my god. This is the best day of my life.
I can't play that again because the noise is so ear-piercingly horrible.
That's a really hard one. Who do you think that is?
I remember it. I just don't remember who said it.
The questions are, who is it? What are they, you know, shouting about? And what year?
That's a really good one. That was...
I do try.
Oh, man, you've stomped me.
Yes.
It was recent.
Yeah, was it last year?
Yep.
Yeah.
Point in the bag, 2019.
Was it for a podium position?
Yes.
And, oh man, I remember. Is it Carlos Sainz?
Oh no, you're
Roman
so...
Roman Grosjean.
No,
but French.
Oh.
It was Pierre.
It's Pierre Gasly.
Second. Brazil. Yeah.
I'll give you 2 points for that one.
Generous, very generous.
Watching is like, oh, you're an idiot. You know, it's like we always say in the podcast when Grace or Paul and I are trying to remember something and people are driving, pounding on the steering wheel. You're such an idiot. Yeah. You know?
well done. He had a pretty torrid year, but saved it at the end.
Well, you're already you're level with Karun Chandhok now, right?
You're level with Karun Chandhok now. Yeah, he's slap bang bottom of the leaderboard. So actually, you're ahead of him. You're ahead of him, so you can't finish last. So that's good. Okay, this is clip number three. Have a little listen to this.
I think there's nothing to discuss. You know, it's quite obvious incident. In the end, it was very disappointing for myself. I think even more because I was the one who were driving and he lost control of his car and crashed in my back. So it was not my problem. It was his problem. I don't know why he's freaking out like that, to be honest.
If you want, I can show you some pictures. So probably, I don't know if you're blind, but it can clearly show you that my front wing is next to your front wing. So that's...
but you're trying to overtake me outside on the curbing, you know?
On the curbing?
Ooh, that's
now this is going back a little way.
Yeah.
What are we thinking? Who are the two? You can hear two voices there. So two drivers. Who's talking? What are they talking about? And what year?
One of these chatted up my wife, by the way.
One of these one of these didn't, you know, had a bit of a dodgy end to his career, especially outside of Formula One.
Same guy that chatted up my wife.
Yeah.
Before she was my wife, before we even knew each other. So it's fine.
That's a really good one.
One of them's German.
Yeah.
It's a curbing.
The other one has his own wine.
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
I've tried it. It's good.
Is it burger?
Nope. No, more modern than that.
Is it? More modern German.
I get to play my countdown. Here we go.
Yeah, go for it. Is it Hulkenberg?
Oh.
I have no idea.
So that was, give me a year, just any year, see if you can get a point.
2000, am I in the right decade?
Yeah.
Okay. 14.
Afraid not. Okay, so I'll put you out of your misery. That was Adrian Sutil and Jarno Trulli at the Abu Dhabi press conference, but they were talking about a crash that they had had at the previous round in Brazil, where basically Trulli lost it all and went straight into the side in his Toyota of Adrian Sutil's Toyota Force India in 2009.
I should have known it was Sutil.
At the press conference. Yeah,
he would shiv you with a champagne flute.
He never went to prison, did he? But he got out.
No, I don't think so. But
he had a whole court case.
Yeah,
I think, and there was a whole thing about Lewis Hamilton not turning up.
Yeah, he was not happy with Lewis.
Lots of drama there. So Trulli was the one that has
Adrian Sutil.
Trulli is the one that has his own wine. He Trulli has wine, and that would have been the first Abu Dhabi Grand Prix, 2009.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Actually, interesting story about Adrian Sutil. So I did wonder what had happened to him after Formula One, because he left Force India, had a year with Sauber, and then I think he was even the reserve for Williams for 1 year.
Yeah.
Didn't do anything. And then just slipped off the face of the earth. And I was like, well, he had a pretty decent career. Whatever happened to him? He just wanted to lay low.
Did he do DTM?
No, he didn't. He has never raced in anything since. And I was like, what's he doing now? I don't see him on any broadcasters. And I am certain, okay, I don't know how 100% this is, but I'm certain I was once on Oxford Street in London and I saw him walking. So he's in London, is what I'm saying.
We should hunt him down.
That's all I got on him, I'm afraid. Nothing that great, but I wonder what
he's
doing.
He's a wonderful piano player, by the way.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe he's
just terrific.
Maybe he's a musician. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Might be a model as well. He always sort of has a steely look.
He's a good looking man, to be fair.
Anyway, 0 points, I'm afraid, on that one, Todd. But you have one more clip to try and redeem yourself.
Redemption.
Let's play it.
Okay.
Right, here we go. Clip number 4.
Austria. Martin was like frothing for it. So I was like, I feel like there's some real sick bastards around here.
Right, who's talking there?
That's Dan.
Yes.
Absolutely. What's he talking about?
I don't remember that comment. It's clearly Daniel, but
what year do you think it might be?
Is that 2 years ago?
What year are we in now?
Close.
One more.
Was it 3?
Yeah,
3.
17.
Was he talking about a shoey?
Yeah.
Absolutely. He was speaking at a presser about doing the shoey on the podium and getting Brundle to do it
in
Austria.
That's it, yeah.
I'll give you the point for that. I'll give you half a point for the year.
Yeah, 2.5 for that one.
So we'll give you 2.5 on that one. Okay, right. Top bonus question for you.
Oh, bonus.
Bonus one for another point, an extra point.
And if you get this, you are an F1 genius.
Yeah, if you do get this, it's difficult. How many points did Nico Rosberg win the 2016 title by?
That is hard.
So how many points did he win it by?
And I think ballpark is okay.
Yeah, ballpark is fine.
Oh, I have to think about that one. That was
the tension.
10 points?
Oh, good effort. Very good effort. Harry?
Good effort. I'm going to give you half a bonus point.
Fair.
It was 6. He won it by 6.
Oh, I was going to say 8, and then I thought, well, maybe it was a race win. Yeah,
I would have been more inclined to give you a full point for that. But no, he won with 385 points, and Hamilton was on 300 and... I've got that wrong. 386 and 380.
Yeah.
Okay, wait, let me do the maths.
See what company you're in.
Okay. Right. So we have two leaderboards. We have the overall leaderboard, and then we have the season three leaderboard. Overall leaderboard, Todd, you have collected 7 points out of a possible 13, which puts you in 21st position, just above broadcasting legend Steve Ryder and just below British touring car driver Tom Chilton. So, you know, decent names to be around with. And that does put you on the season three leaderboard in 10th position out of, what are we on, 12 now. So, could have been better, could have been worse. I'd say that was a job well done.
You know, with that kind of motorsport mileage, I should start a podcast.
Yeah, you really should. Well, thank you, Todd, for playing Motormouth. Yeah.
Well done. It was a solid effort. Who was 11th in season three? On the leaderboard?
Tom Chilton and Steve Ryder.
Oh, Steve Ryder. Okay. Yeah. Mm. Solid effort. It's sort of a bit better than Williams, but not as good as Force India Racing Point, no, whatever the hell they're called.
On a media
Toro Rosso, yeah. So listen, Todd, what does the future hold for the Parc Fermé? What are the plans moving forward?
Yeah, it's a great question. I wish I could tell you. You know, it's not my day job, so and it takes a lot of time and it takes a lot of resources to do what it is we do. And, you know, my hope is, you know, we always went at it as, you know, in the early days, you know, people say, oh, well, this podcast and this, I am so busy. I don't have time to listen to other podcasts and certainly not my own podcast. And I take flack for that. I take some incoming for that, but it's not personal. It's just that I don't have time. It's not my day job. So, I think the idea for us is just creating some more kind of content that we think our community wants. You know, it's weird. I people would say that if they do this for a living, like you guys have this podcast, you do this for, you know, your main thing, and this is what you guys do, and it's awesome.
We're the same as you. This is weekends and evenings. We've both, we're the same, so, exactly the same.
So you know what I'm talking about. It's difficult to say, okay, who's your listener community? It's a little difficult to know. I can look globally. We're listened to globally. There's no doubt about it. And the UK is the second largest listenership behind America. So, you know, I think we just try to find new ways to have new content that really speaks to our community. We've always said that we're fans talking about the sport. We've never pretended to be F1 media and press in that sense. Yes, I've had FIA creds. Yes, I've been in the paddock several times and I met a lot of the people, but we always do it with a sense of reverence because what we really represent is the fans. And that's always been who we were. And so I think in the future for Parc Fermé, it's trying to come up with new and compelling content that really speaks to our fans and helps them unpack or enjoy the sport that we all love so much.
Yeah, no, that's great. And I presume you're not going to change your name again. F1 are not going to come knocking on your door and say, listen, Todd, you got to get rid of that.
That's a funny story. Yeah, so it was FormulaOneBlog.com for years, since 2005. And a few years ago, I got a cease and desist letter from the lawyers at Formula One. Fair enough. You know, I didn't overreact, but reached out to a friend of mine, Chris, who knows Bernie Eccleston, and was talking to Chris about it. And he says, well, let me ask Bernie about it. This is silly. You guys have carried water for Formula One a long time with no benefit to yourself. He said, let me talk to him. So he did. And so Bernie said, yeah, you know what? That's silly. He said, we probably need to get the domain, but then we'll just do a dollar a year lease for the domain, you know, just internally, just continuing forever. And so that's what we did. And we worked out a deal with Bernie. Bernie doesn't know me. He's never met me. Didn't have any idea who the heck I was. And he did that deal with us. And so it was great. And so we had full license by Bernie Eccleston to use FormulaOneBlog.com. Then Liberty Media, an American company, buys FormulaOneBlog.com. And at the end of that year for renewal, they said, yeah, we're not renewing it.
No. Oh, no.
It's like, oh, Thank you. Well done. I had Bernie Eccleston, the guy who people love to vilify, who couldn't have been more delightful about it. And then the Americans buy it and shut me down in a heartbeat, so we had to change the name.
But frustrating, because that, I suppose, with a name comes a footprint, like a digital footprint that you lose.
For sure.
So it's a big impact on, you know, organizations like
us. Huge impact to us, and it radically impacted us and our listenership, our viewership, our site visits, the whole thing. It was very difficult to recover from, but you know, it is what it is. I didn't argue. It has Formula One in our name, and I get it. I understand. So, and it's not that Liberty were rude. They weren't rude about it. They were fine. They just said, you know, it's just not a place we want to go. And, you know, understandably, now they have their own podcast and they have their own things going on, so fair enough.
Yeah. Mm. Okay.
Okay. A few quick fire questions at you, Todd. Current favorite F1 driver?
Current?
Yeah.
Current.
That is hard. It's hard not to like Lewis, hard not to Max Verstappen is amazing. Mm. I tend to like the human story. I get frustrated when we dehumanize people by forcing them into groups and saying, well, you know how F1 drivers are. No, not really, because Esteban Ocon has a markedly different story than Charles Leclerc. And I tend to like those stories about Ocon and Alex Albon. I think he's got such a cool story of struggle and coming through and to achieve what he's had. Lewis is the same. I think I'm kind of intrigued by those. I don't know. It's tough. I've met Sebastian Vettel 3 times, and the guy couldn't be a nicer guy. And I really like Seb a lot. But right now, I think Max is kind of exciting me a little bit. It's a hard question, Harry. It's hard to, I'm sure it's the same for you guys. You like them all. I mean, how can you not like Daniel Ricciardo?
Yeah.
You
know? I have one driver that no one will ever eclipse and is the best in my mind. It's Paul DeResta.
PDR. I love PDR.
Thank you. Another person who loves PDR.
PDR is awesome. That Sky Sports broadcast.
God, don't encourage him.
So much less without PDR and his insight.
I hope you're not being sarcastic.
No, I'm not at all. No. Him and Ant Davidson make that broadcast, and Ted Kravitz. I happen to be a big Ted Kravitz fan.
Oh, but yeah, of course. But PDR, I'll admit he was a bit sportsman-y, rough around the edges when he first started broadcasting, but they've obviously done some training with him, and I think he's brilliant, and he should have had a much, much better Formula One career, and it wasn't his fault either. That's all I'm saying.
You hang on to that, because I am always, people laugh at me because I was always a Nick Heidfeld fan.
Oh, God, yeah.
And people are like, oh, my gosh, Nick Heidfeld fan. But so hang on to that, because PDR, that's I like PDR. He's awesome.
Honestly, the day we get him on this podcast, I don't know if I'll even be able to talk to him.
He's a great guy.
Oh, dear. Two of my favorite racetracks, Spa or Silverstone. Which one would you take if you could only pick one of those?
Well, here I'm representing, of course, Silverstone. No, I'm talking to two British guys about Silverstone. I got to be honest with you guys, Spa.
Oh, yeah, no, that's fair.
Yeah.
It's
fair. It's, people would always ask me, you know, well, you know, you probably really want to go to Monaco. And I'm like, no, I want to go to Spa, you know. There's something magic about that. And Paul's brother, who's been in motorsport his entire life and works at Multimatic, super good guy named Steve, Paul on our podcast. And we were talking about Spa, and he put it best. He said, the reason it's such a great track is it is perfect in its imperfections. You know, it's not a Tilke track, the Eau Rouge and everything about it, its imperfections are what makes it perfect. Mm-hmm. And it's a great track. I interviewed Brian Redman. Are you familiar with who Brian Redman is? British sports car driver? No?
No, probably should be.
Yeah. Oh, he's awesome. Yeah, you guys definitely check Brian Redman out. Brian Redman raced in the Halcyon days in the 60s and 70s. He was a fantastic sports car driver in British motorsport. And he would tell me, and when I interviewed him, he said, Jackie Stewart's got it wrong. He says the green hell is the toughest, most scary track on the circuit.
The
goes, it was Spa.
Yeah.
He says, because the speeds were so much faster. He said, I would lay and shake in sweats all night before a race at Spa.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Yeah, and I think I'm fortunate enough to have been to the Belgium Grand Prix a few times and stood up at the top of Eau Rouge, and watching cars go through there is unbelievable. Yeah, and actually, went to your point about the green hell, when Tom Chilton, the British touring car driver, was on here, we were quizzing him about the Nordschleife and all that stuff. And he said, actually, yes, it's a terrifying place to race and you're on the edge, but because of the flow of it, the way he put it, and we took the piss out of him a little bit, but you know, he's right to a degree, is that the car almost drives itself round. It's so flowy. Like, you know, you sort of flow from one to the next, you go around these sort of banking corners and the car kind of takes itself. So I'm with you there. No, good answer. I'm curious about, we've seen you strumming away on your guitar on your socials. You're obviously quite a talented musician
the
there.
Background of your screen there.
Yeah. Yeah.
Quite a collection.
Yeah, it's quite impressive. But what are you crap at? What are you useless at?
Oh, God. How long do we have?
Yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what I'm bad at. I'm bad at shamelessly promoting my website and podcast.
Do it. Now's the time. Do it.
I know. Well, I feel so, I don't know, weird when I do it. You know, I've tried before to post and, you know, like a podcast will come out and I'll post on social media when it comes out. And then I'll post it like, you know, a day later or whatever. And I get people, yeah, you already posted it. It's like, okay, you know, everyone else does it. They post the crap out of it. My timeline, I see, you know, constantly everybody's posting the same thing, promoting their stuff. I do it and I take personal offense when someone gets mad at me for doing it. So, you know, I just, I'm really bad at that. I don't like bigging myself up like that. And I don't, I've really dropped the ball on that, because people say, you know, you have over 700 podcasts, you know, and we do, but I don't know. I just, I'm crap at that.
I think when you get to 1,000, you'll have to do something special, because that's a lot. Not that many people. I mean, how many podcasts are there in the world? I don't even know, but there can't be that many that have gone past 1,000 episodes. You know, I think a lot of people start a podcast.
Yeah, the daily ones have, but we're not daily.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we're weekly.
Yeah. Okay, we've got final three questions for you, then we'll let you get on with your day. Harry, you want to kick off?
Yeah. What's got you excited at the moment?
The start of the season. I'm excited for that. Yeah, excited that they've squeezed 8 in. I think they'll get 15 because they need that broadcast money.
Yeah.
So they'll figure a way to get 15 in. I'm sure Ross is on top of that. But not quite sure that how I feel if it only ends up 8 and 10. Is that a full season? I think there's going to be a lot of people hanging asterisk on Lewis's 7th title if it's not a full season. And that's not fair to Lewis. Anyway, yeah, hopefully they'll get 15 or more.
Yeah, I think by the look of that, when they released that calendar, it seemed like this is the provisional, this is the first calendar. There's more coming.
It seems like that was the European calendar, and the rest will hopefully be, you know, the Singapore's and all that.
Yeah.
Singapore, they won't do it, but Abu Dhabi.
We have another question, which I suppose is semi-relevant. I mean, we ask everyone this usually, and you're the first sort of, I guess, left-field guest that we've had. Most of our guests have been racing drivers or pundits or so on. And we ask them, if not doing what you're doing, what would you be doing? You do this, like you say, not a side hustle, but it's a side passion. And you have a day job, and you're a businessman, you're an entrepreneur. So I guess if you weren't doing the Parc Fermé, you'd be off doing your business bits and pieces.
Yeah, if I wasn't doing my day job, I would like to do the website and podcast full time for sure. I have such a passion for it. And if I wasn't doing the website and podcast, I'd be doing what I do in my day job and am. You know, I'm just squeezing in the podcast and the website. If I wasn't doing either of them, I'd be a professional guitar player for sure.
Yeah. What's your style of music? What's your thing?
You know, I was born and raised British blues rock. You know, all the greats, Clapton and David Gilmour is a huge influence. All those guys. So yeah.
Well, we can. There's another guy we can form the band with, Harry.
Yeah, we. I mean, sort of. What can you play again?
Me? Well, I can't. Yeah. I can play the guitar a little bit.
You're also a singer. Two singers.
Learning the piano. Yeah, I've got an album. Go on, just saying.
An album.
Nice.
It's a choral album. It doesn't
count. It's
not count.
The point. It's still an album. It doesn't matter.
It doesn't count.
That's awesome.
At all.
And Harry appears in theatre, don't you know, darling?
And all that kind of stuff. So
nice.
I'll put on a performance for you.
Please.
Final question, though, for you, Todd. What are you scared of?
Yeah, that's a tough question. Are you looking like those, like, I don't like spiders?
Could be anything. Sort of well, we had a
whole collection.
We've had all
phobias
sorts.
And we've had quite the philosophical answers.
Yeah, we had Freddie.
Either.
We had Freddie Hunt, James Hunt's son.
Yeah.
And he couldn't even answer it. It got too much, got deep.
And we really didn't intend it when we wrote it. I don't think we intended it to be a deep answer, but it's been interpreted as such over the episodes.
You know, it's one of those things when you challenge someone, what's your fear? You know,
yeah.
It's a tough question because everyone is in a different mental space around that word and what it means to them. And in some sense, yeah, I don't like spiders much. But my philosophical answer is I don't like mobs and I don't like mobocracy. I don't like dehumanizing people by lumping them into collectives. I really like getting to know the person. And you guys had a musician who probably said it best. I don't know if you've heard of him, but his name is Sting. And I quote him because I think he said it best. He said that men go crazy in congregations. They only get better one by one. And I firmly believe that's the truth, because it would be easy for someone to watch this and lump all three of us into the podcasting category. But Tim and Harry, you guys have uniquely used stories and lives that I'm much more interested in than just as a podcaster. So, yeah, I don't like that. I don't like dehumanizing and mobocracy.
Great. And are you scared of spiders?
Depends how big they are.
Nominally. Yeah, I am to the shock value of seeing one, because I got bitten by a brown recluse one time. That wasn't fun.
Oh God,
a brown recluse.
Yeah,
sounds nasty. For life.
Yeah, it's not fun. And so, but the other thing is, okay, here's better than that. I don't like getting into water that I can't see the bottom of.
Yeah,
lakes, rivers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's
absolutely
a good one.
Absolutely mortified by that. Mm.
That's a good one. The weirdest one we had was Crofty from Sky Sports F1, who has a phobia of tea bags.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Really weird.
Really weird.
Very strange. Huh. Very strange man. But listen, Todd, that brings us to a close. Thank you so much for joining us. I've thoroughly enjoyed listening to you speak today. Thoroughly enjoyed listening to all of your podcasts over the last few years. They've kept me company on the commute into London and to work. Keep it up. And let's hope there's many more to come. Where can people find you? What do they look for? I know you don't like picking yourself up, but go on just for once. Where can people find you?
Well, first of all, guys, the honor is all mine. Thanks so much for having me on the show. I couldn't be more grateful for the time and interest in having me on. I'm humbled by that. You can find the website, certainly theparkforme.com is the website. And if you go to iTunes or your favorite podcast player and look up The Park for May, you'll find it on most of them, like Stitcher and all those podcast players. So that's where you'll find us.
Great. Well, we'll chuck all your links in our description. But Todd, Negative Camber, thank you for joining us.
You bet. Thanks so much, guys.
Thank you so much for listening to the Motormouth podcast. Do make sure you give us a follow on our socials, Twitter at Motormouth _, Instagram at Motormouth _official, and on Facebook, just search Motormouth. You can download the Motormouth app where you can get exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile and interact with others, and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy. Don't forget to like, subscribe and review. And until next time, you've been listening to the Motormouth podcast. We here at Motormouth are a small, independent team. Since starting this podcast just over a year ago, we're reaching over 15,000 of you across 30 countries around the world. And we want to bring the biggest names in motorsport to you. Find out about their lives and careers and have a chat about whatever is going on in the motorsport world. We are determined to carry on producing these episodes. However, they do come at a cost. From securing guests to equipment and editing software and expanding the podcast and app, that's why we've set up a Patreon page where you can help us to carry on doing what we do. There are three levels at which you can contribute, starting from £5 a month to £10 or £20. Each tier allows you slightly different levels of access. Depending on which one you choose, you can enjoy early access to podcast episodes, exclusive member benefits, merchandise, shout-outs, and your chance to feature on one of our shows. Any support you can give us is massively appreciated and will help us grow and continue to bring cool content to race fans all over the world.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.